The greatest story ever told is a true story. It is a story of adventures, battles, kings and queens, heroes and villains, good and evil, history and prophecy. It is your story. Come join the adventure of the Bible story. Chapter 105. Another son takes matters into his own hands. Something was wrong. Tamar never looked like this. When Absalom, Tamar's older brother, saw her stumbling up the path toward the gate, he went outside to meet her. Filled with concern over the look on her face, "Tamar, whatever has happened, it will be okay," said Absalom. "Please let me help you."
"Get away from me. Don't touch me,"
she sputtered as she began tearing at her garment. Stumbling into the house, she fell to the ground near the fireplace. Absalom followed her, insistent. "Look me in the eyes. Move your hands from your face. Let me see you," he said. But Tamar was crying uncontrollably and only stopped to put ashes on her head. Suddenly, Absalom grabbed Tamar's arm. It finally dawned on him what had happened. He noticed that Tamar had torn apart her special robe, the one made for the king's unmarried virgin daughters. "Where have you been?" he asked. "Who did this to you? Tell me." Memories flooded into Absalom's mind. Images of Amnon leering at Tamar. The odd comments. Amnon being sick and asking for Tamar to make him food. Now it was all becoming clear. It was Amnon, wasn't it? "Did he do this to you?" He could tell from her expression that it was true. Absalom pulled his sister toward him, wrapping his arms around her in a protective embrace. "It's okay," he said, lifting her chin so he could look into her eyes. Absalom continued, "It is important that you do exactly what I say. Don't tell anybody about this. I will take care of it in due time. Don't worry. I won't ever forget what Amnon has done." Even though Absalom tried to keep what happened a secret, eventually rumors began to swirl. Soon, King David heard what had happened. He was extremely angry with Amnon. However, he didn't do anything significant to punish him, because Amnon was his oldest son and the heir to the throne. Like Eli the high priest and Samuel the prophet, David had allowed the affairs of state to cause him to neglect his family and proper child rearing. Now that his children were older, they began to believe they were above the law. The fact that David did not properly correct Amnon for what he had done to Tamar led to an even greater tragedy. Absalom was outraged that nothing had been done about Amnon. For 2 whole years, his anger grew. But instead of telling his father David about his views, he kept his true emotions hidden. To all outward appearances, Absalom appeared to have forgiven and forgotten Amnon's transgression. One day, Absalom came to give a report to David about the annual sheep shearing. This was an important time for Israel, when the sheep would be sheared and the wool collected to be sold or traded. But this year, Absalom had something special planned. "It would be great if you could come and join us to see this year's collection," Absalom told his father. "I have invited the whole family. The harvest looks to be abundant, and we will have a merry celebration afterward." Absalom didn't really want his father to come, but he knew that if he did, the rest of the family, including Amnon, would be obligated to come too. "Unfortunately, I wouldn't be able to come this year," said David. "I have other pressing matters, and I don't want to burden you with all the extra expense that would go along with an official visit. But I know you will have a good time without me." "I don't care about the expense," Absalom replied. "I was hoping to make it a family experience. It has been a long time since all of us have gotten together. Only Amnon hasn't replied to my invite yet. Could you at least make sure Amnon comes?" At first, David felt that Absalom was acting a bit odd, but then David agreed to send Amnon in the hope that the get-together would promote brotherly bonding and harmony. At the end of the sheep harvest, Absalom invited the whole family to a spectacular feast. There was much drinking and laughter. As the evening progressed, some of the guests, including Amnon, began to get clumsy because of all the alcohol. No one noticed that Absalom was abnormally quiet. Suddenly, Absalom stood up and walked toward Amnon. For 2 years, he had waited for this day, the opportunity to avenge his sister. A puzzled expression clouded Amnon's inebriated face. For only a brief moment, the realization of what was about to happen registered. Amnon tried to pull his sword, but his movements were sluggish. Several of Absalom's servants rushed toward him, plunging their weapons into the drunken prince. Confusion ensued. Startled guests turned over tables and tripped over themselves as they tried to flee. Absalom had had his revenge. News quickly reached Jerusalem of a massacre. All the king's sons were dead. Absalom had killed them all. Not one was left. At least that is what the first report said. King David was stunned. Only days before, he was hoping that his family was finally becoming closer. David plunged into a state of shocked mourning. As was the ancient custom, he ripped his clothes and laid down on the floor. A great gloom fell over his house. All of the servants tore their clothes too. David couldn't help but think back to Nathan the prophet's words. All this tragedy was coming about because of his sins with Bathsheba. Then Jonadab, the sly friend of Amnon, who was partially responsible for starting the whole mess, arrived with better news. "All the king's sons were not dead," he said. "It was just a rumor that had been exaggerated and twisted. Only Amnon was dead. David didn't know who to believe, but he knew that Jonadab wasn't completely trustworthy. Just then, one of the servants reported a large group of people coming toward the city. "See for yourself if what I said is true," said Jonadab. Sure enough, David could see all his sons and their families. Only Amnon and Absalom were missing. Meanwhile, Absalom was fleeing for his life. He knew that the penalty for murder was death. The cities of sanctuary would not provide him protection because they were places of refuge for those people who accidentally killed someone. He had to get out of Israel. After several days of fast riding, he made it all the way north to the court of Geshur. Talmai, the Syrian king of Geshur, was Absalom's grandfather. Talmai promised to give Absalom protection until he could safely return to claim his place in Israel. With Amnon dead, Absalom was one step closer to the throne, but only if he was ever allowed back. The loss of Amnon was a blow to David, but it was made worse by the fact that Absalom was gone as well. To David, it seemed as if he had lost two sons, not one. David missed Absalom, and over time, he forgave him for what he had done. Time flew by, and soon 3 years had passed. Joab, David's general, could see that the loss of Absalom still weighed heavily on David. He knew that David wanted to invite Absalom home, but that he was concerned about the example it would set for the nation. So the meddlesome Joab devised a plan he thought would both help the king and ingratiate himself in the process. He sent an elderly woman who lived in a far away part of Israel to petition the king. He chose someone the king would not recognize and told her to put somber clothing on and dress like she was mourning and sad with grief. He then arranged for her to meet David. When the woman came before the king, she knelt down with her face toward the floor.
"Please help me," she said.
"What's troubling you, dear woman?" David asked.
"I am a widow. My husband is dead. I had two sons who got into a fight. They were good boys, but the one hit the other and killed him. Now my whole family wants to take my only remaining son and kill him. Please have mercy and save my son. I am old and have no other children. I know it is the law, but if he dies, there will be no one left to carry on our name."
King David was moved by the woman's passion. Although he didn't entirely recognize why, he empathized with her situation. "Don't worry," David told her. "I will pardon your son. No one will hurt him." The woman pretended to be very happy and overwhelmed by the king's compassion. She then asked if she could ask one more question.
"If you could have mercy on my son, who is a complete stranger, why have you not had mercy on your own son, whom you have banished from Israel?"
Silence filled the room. For a brief moment, the woman thought she had gone too far. David's thoughts swirled. At last, he spoke. "Did Joab put you up to this?" he demanded.
"Yes, it was his idea, all of it,"
she said unto the king's piercing eyes.
"He hoped your own words would help convince you to bring Absalom home. Please forgive me for taking part in this.
Although the Bible doesn't say, David was probably a little annoyed with Joab's meddling again. Yet, at the same time, David was happy to hear that other people wanted Absalom to come home too. This was the excuse he was looking for. David summoned Joab, his general. "You probably think you are pretty clever," David said. "I saw through your little scheme." Joab stood at attention, expecting to get yelled at for interfering. At that moment, a wry smile formed on David's face. "Now that you have concocted this elaborate plan, you might as well see it through to the finish," David told Joab. "Go to Geshur and bring Absalom, my son, home." Joab bowed before the king. "I am pleased that you have taken my humble advice," he said. "I am only glad to be a help to you." Joab was backing away to leave when David spoke again. "But Joab, when you bring Absalom back, make sure he understands that he is not allowed at the palace and that he won't be allowed to see me for the time being," said David. "He should stay at his own house and not go in public. People still have to know that murder is a serious crime that can't be taken lightly." Absalom's return caused a lot of excitement. In all of Israel, there was no man who was so much praised for his physical beauty. Absalom was a very handsome, muscular man who stood out among the crowd. One of the many attributes that distinguished him was his long hair. It was so long and thick that each year he had about 6 pounds of it trimmed off. To Absalom, it was a source of pride and vanity. Like King Saul, Absalom was the type of person that people typically looked up to and admire because of his physical attributes. It is natural for people to look at things like stature and personality, but God is more concerned about what people are like on the inside. Absalom had 3 sons and a daughter. He named his daughter Tamar after his sister, whose revenge he had taken into his own hands. Absalom felt good to be home. In his mind, this was where he belonged, at the center of Israel. But he just couldn't understand why his father wouldn't see him. He knew David loved him. Joab made that clear. But this waiting was getting tiresome. He wanted to be out and about where people could see him. The first year was hardly bearable. But now a second full year had passed and still the king wouldn't receive him at court or let him take part in any official duties. Worst of all, he felt like he was practically a prisoner in his own house. If something didn't change soon, all the people would forget about him, he lamented. Absalom had already asked Joab for a meeting, hopefully that Joab would help him see his father. For some reason, however, Joab refused to even talk with him. Absalom sent another invitation, and Joab refused a second time. The young prince considered this totally unacceptable treatment, especially since he had ambition to become Israel's next king. In an outburst of anger, Absalom called his servants. "I want you to go to Joab's barley field, the one that is next to mine, and light it on fire. Make sure the flames are burning strongly before you return." He was certain this would command Joab's attention. Sure enough, it wasn't long before Joab came storming in. "Just what do you think you're doing?" asked Joab. "You might be a prince, but you aren't king yet. I have a mind to go to your father about this." "Great, that is exactly what I want you to do," replied Absalom. "For 2 whole years, I have barely left this house. The king still won't see me. What is the point of being back home? I might as well be in exile in Geshur." Absalom continued, "I want to know one way or the other. If my father still wants to punish me, let him kill me. But let's get it done and over with." Joab finally relented and agreed to help Absalom. Joab knew it was possible Absalom could eventually become king, so maybe he didn't think it wise to offend the prince any longer. At Joab's urging, King David was persuaded to relent. He really did miss Absalom. At the sight of his son bowing down, he couldn't restrain himself any longer. He grabbed Absalom and hugged and kissed him. Absalom, his son, was back. Now that he was free, Absalom made it a point to act as princely as possible. Absalom liked to think of himself as an important person. He liked power. Oftentimes, he rode through the city on a fancy chariot. The Israelites were unaccustomed to chariots and horses, so he drew a lot of attention. When he traveled, he had heralds go before him to clear a path. Sometimes 50 servants would run before him to announce his arrival. It was quite a spectacle that also stoked Absalom's vanity. During this period in history, when any Israelite had a disagreement or a case of law that needed to be decided, early in the morning, he would go to the gate of the city where the king would hear the case. Sometimes, due to how busy he was, King David was unable to get to everyone. Some people grew discontent because it took so long to get a judgment. Absalom started exploiting this frustration. He made it a point to be at the gate as often as possible. He talked to as many people as he could. He worked the crowds by empathizing with them and dropping hints about how it would be different if he were king. Sometimes he would listen to the complaint stories, and if they were powerful men whom he thought would be able to help him in the future, he would give them a favorable opinion of their case. Absalom became quite the politician. Through flatteries and deceit, he stole the hearts and loyalty of many of the leading men of Israel. Under the pretense of wanting justice for all, he portrayed his father as unconcerned or weak. But his boldness grew until he even dared to insinuate that David was corrupt. He did everything he could to find even the tiniest, most insignificant criticism of David's rule to persuade Israel's leaders to reject their king. Discontent with David's rule was growing, and David was oblivious to the insurrection that was looming. Soon, Absalom was ready to strike. But before he could attempt to wrestle the kingdom from David, he needed a headquarters for his revolt. It needed to be somewhere close to Jerusalem, the capital, yet far enough away to be hidden from his father's eyes. He decided on the city of Hebron. Hebron was an important religious, civil, and military center. The patriarchs, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, were buried near there in the cave of Machpelah. It was the ancient sacred city of the priests. It served as Israel's capital for 7.5 years. It was the place where David was anointed king of Judah and later king of Israel. It was also a military stronghold in Judah. It was a seat of power, and many warriors identified with the place. It would be the perfect location to be anointed king. So Absalom lied and made up an excuse about why he wanted to go to Hebron. When I was living in exile in Geshur, I vowed to God that if he would let me return to Jerusalem, I would wholeheartedly serve him, he told his father. May I have permission to go to Hebron to give offerings of thanksgiving and worship God there? David, happy to hear that Absalom wanted to develop a closer relationship with God, willingly gave his consent and blessing. Unbeknownst to David, Absalom had already invited 200 of the most important men of Jerusalem to travel with him. Although they didn't know what Absalom was planning, Absalom hoped that their presence in Hebron would give a sense of legitimacy to what he was about to do. Absalom may have also hoped that their absence from Jerusalem would make David think that they had deserted him. Absalom had also sent emissaries to all his allies throughout Israel with the order that upon his signal, they were to announce him king. When news got out that David's trusted advisor, Ahithophel, had joined Absalom's plot, even more people joined Absalom. Ahithophel was Bathsheba's grandfather. It is possible that he still harbored some anger toward David over how she was treated. The illegal meeting in Hebron appeared to be an overwhelming success for Absalom. There seemed to be unstoppable momentum in his favor. Many of those who only learned of the plot after they arrived were convinced that it was a good idea to join, and those who disagreed succumbed to the pressure. David's subjects were defecting. His son was rebelling. He was about to lose his kingdom, and he didn't even know it. To be continued in our next episode, and continue the adventure by reading the Bible story. Find it under the Resources tab at pcg.church.